This is the Strand, one of London's most famous streets. And in Tudor times, its grand houses belonged to the Tudor elite, including Sir Walter Raleigh and the Earl of Essex. And in the autumn of 1584, it was also home to two indigenous Americans called Manteo and Wanchese from what is now called North Carolina.
I'm Jerry Broughton, and this is We Are the Tudors, listening for the voices of those whose lives have been silenced or lost to history. Decades before the English settlers known as the Pilgrim Fathers reached Massachusetts, in 1620 in the Mayflower, a much darker and less successful attempt was made to colonise the North American coast. In the early 1580s, Queen Elizabeth gave her court favourite Sir Walter Raleigh a royal patent to settle the Americas. It was mainly a way of challenging the empire of Catholic Spain. But Raleigh also saw the chance to get rich quickly and sent a reconnaissance expedition to Roanoke Island on the North Carolina coast. Marvin Tupper-Jones is director of the Chowan Discovery Group and is descended from the Chowanoke tribe. He told me what happened next in the encounter between the English and two particular members of the indigenous communities.
And so in 1584, the English, wanting to colonize the area and also be able to raid Spanish ships, came to the area. But they met with the Roanoke people, who greeted them and hosted them. They stayed a few weeks. They took Manteo by agreement and Wanchese. Manteo was a Croatan Indian, which is further south, still Algonquin, and Wanchese was a Roanoke Indian.
And out of this world stepped Manteo and Wanchese, who for whatever reasons, voluntarily or coerced, got on board an English boat and embarked on a 4,000-mile journey that would bring them to England. Dr. Lauren Working writes on the early settlement of the Americas and its effect on English culture.
What do we know about Manteo's arrival in London and what he did? Because here we are on London Strand, and we know that he actually was living round here.
Manteo lived in Durham House, Walter Raleigh's large estate, just, as you say, not far from where we are now. And this is an area where a lot of courtiers and merchants have their residences, their gardens. It's a lively area right on the Thames, but also in close proximity to the Inns of Court, to the Royal Court in Westminster as well.
We have an account from those on board the return voyage, written by Arthur Barlow, but it only tells us that
we brought home two of the savages whose name were Wanchese and Manteo. It may have been that the English did kind of view them as emblems of the colonial project, so kind of as marvels or as wonders who showed the potential that indigenous peoples had for adopting civility. And I suppose, thinking cynically, Manteo would have been particularly useful for that for the English, because he seemed interested in kind of learning the English language quite well, becoming very fluent, wearing English clothes, things like that.
What sort of experience he must have had, both encountering the English and then presumably learning some of the English language. And then there he is staying in a large palatial residence on the Strand in central London a year later. I mean, it's a kind of extraordinary transformation.
Well, it's apparent that Manteo certainly had a curiosity. Manteo saw a new world that maybe had a lot to offer despite its faults, not realizing it could be destructive to his own world. Wanchese saw that maybe what the world in Europe, in England had to offer was not worth it, and it was destructive to the life he knew.
So here were two indigenous Americans. One, Wanchese, wouldn't play the colonial game. He didn't cooperate with the English and was resistant to learning the language or revealing anything about his homeland. The other, Manteo, seemed to relish the experience, and in particular his alliance with Walter Raleigh's resident scholar, the brilliant mercurial English mathematician and translator, Thomas Harriot. Lauren Working described what happened during their time together.
It was here on the Strand, so in this pulsing centre of so much political and social life in London, that Manteo worked very closely with Thomas Harriot to devise what's known as the Osomocomoc orthography, which is basically an Algonquin English dictionary. It's a phonetic language to capture Algonquin communication because, of course, Algonquin is largely operates through oral or spoken history. So in some ways, there is a sense in which the indigenous world of the Americas must have kind of started to open itself up to Harriet, to Raleigh, to people coming in and out of Durham House as they're able to converse with Manteo and have a way into his life worlds through his own language.
So there's a very subtle way in which this New World encounter is starting to get into the reality of Tudor London life, right? So there's a sense in which the languages are being assimilated. What else is happening? I mean, is there an exchange of goods?
Their clothing that they had with them, you know, pouches and adornments and jewellery, they must have brought that with them. There is a record from 1603 of several Algonquins travelling in canoes along the Thames while staying in the home of James I, Secretary of State, Robert Cecil. And I just love to imagine that idea of a nobleman kind of waking up in his house on the Strand, or indeed a noble woman, and looking outside their windows and just seeing these Algonquins passing by in canoes, perhaps engaging in a bit of morning fishing.
After 8 months, Harriet's dictionary was finished, and Raleigh, now calling himself Lord and Governor of Virginia, had completed preparations to return to Roanoke. On April the 9th, 1585, 600 English settlers, commanded by Ralph Lane and composed of soldiers, carpenters, blacksmiths, cooks and shoesmiths, set sail from Plymouth. They included Manteo and Wanchese.
They returned and settled at Roanoke Island, and it was a military force. And that was the beginning of Anglo atrocities against indigenous people in North America.
The colony quickly fell apart. There was little food, and Wanchese took the opportunity to abandon the English and return to his tribe. But Manteo, dressed and speaking like a Tudor gentleman, persuaded the Croatans to work with the English. It failed. The attempted settlement was a disaster. Lane, more used to massacring rebels in Ireland, tried to terrorise and divide the Indian communities, kidnapping chieftains and burning villages. But it didn't work. The hungry settlers limped through the winter. The following summer, when Sir Francis Drake arrived after sacking Spanish-held Cartagena, the English abandoned Roanoke, leaving just a small garrison and returned to England. This time, just with Manteo.
And it's an amazing moment because I think it's also the voyage, not only where we're talking about Wanchese and Manteo, but actually Drake then returns with Turkish captives who are then converted to Anglicanism that year. So you get this extraordinary global exchange that seems to be going on across the Atlantic, with London as the kind of key hub of so much of this activity.
Yes, and I imagine that given how diverse kind of ships were, I mean, there's also just so many other kind of peoples and cultures coming into the streets of London as a result of those exchanges that might not even have been recorded, but must have made London an even more kind of multilingual, multicultural place.
The returning fleet arrived in Plymouth in July 1586, bringing with it Manteo, as well as some other new arrivals from America. Potatoes, corn, and snuff. But Raleigh was furious at the abandonment of his American colony and ordered a new fleet to resettle the area, led by the artist John White. It left in May 1587, this time with women and children, including White's own pregnant daughter, Eleanor Dare. Once again, Manteo headed back across the Atlantic, but it would prove to be for the last time. The fleet arrived in Roanoke in July to a scene of chaos and devastation.
In 1587, when the Lost Colony arrives, they had no friends left. the English expeditions began a run of atrocities, and they also brought disease, which neither side could explain, except it was killing half the population.
Yet for some reason, Manteo remained loyal to the English. Even after a botched raid on a local village on the 9th of August killed several people from his own tribe. 4 days later, on the 13th of August, 1587, he was baptized into the Church of England, the first indigenous American to do so, and was given the title of Lord of Roanoke. Like his relations with Wanchese and the English over the previous turbulent 3 years, we may never know what he felt about these honours, or the sincerity of his conversion. Just 5 days later, Eleanor Dare gave birth to the first English child to be born in America. And a week later, on the 25th of August, White set sail for England, leaving behind Manteo and over 100 surviving colonists, including his daughter and grandson. He promised to return with supplies and reinforcements. But by the time he reached England, the imminent arrival of the Spanish Armada meant no ships could be spared until the summer of 1590. White finally returned to Roanoke on the 18th of August 1590, his grandson's third birthday. But the camp was abandoned, with no sign of his daughter, grandson, or Manteo. All that remained was the word Croatoan, carved on a wooden post. White assumed the colonists had fled to the nearby island of Croatoan, which was the home of Manteo. But before he could sail to the island, a storm scattered the fleet. White was forced to sail back to England, abandoning the lost colony of Roanoke, including his daughter and his grandson. Nobody knows what happened to the colonists or Manteo. Perhaps they were massacred. But Marvin Tupper-Jones believes they could have been absorbed into indigenous American communities.
They would have been assimilated. Now, people to this day talk about, well, there were folks that had light hair and this and that and the other. That gene pool was not big enough to affect Eastern North Carolina to be of much notice. You know, we're talking like 100 years after, that gene pool would have been maybe slightly noticeable, but we're talking under 100 people or less among several thousand.
We may never know what happened to the lost colony, but if English men and women were assimilated into indigenous American communities at the end of the 16th century, they were not unlike the other Tudors, including Turks, Moroccans, Russians, Jews, and Muslims, that settled in London, and over decades of marriage and reproduction, became a part of this island's history.